When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. Welcome back, fans of the strange and the supernatural, to Whispers from the Dark. I am your guide, Raven Vale, and tonight we journey to a place where the icy grip of winter met an unspeakable terror, where 9 experienced hikers vanished into a desolate mountain range, only to be found in a manner that defies all logic, leaving behind a mystery that has haunted the world for over 6 decades. We speak tonight of the Dyatlov Pass incident, a chilling tale from the frozen heart of the Ural Mountains. Picture, if you will, the vast, unforgiving expanse of the northern Ural Mountains in the Soviet Union. It is January 1959, a time of bitter cold, of endless snow-laden forests, and peaks that pierce the sky like jagged teeth. Into this formidable landscape ventured a group of 9 young, highly experienced ski hikers from the Ural Polytechnic Institute, led by 23-year-old Igor Dyatlov, a driven and respected student. Their expedition was ambitious, a challenging trek to a Tortan mountain, a peak whose name, in the local Mansi language, chillingly translates to "Don't go there." This was no amateur outing. These were seasoned adventurers, skilled in winter survival, equipped for the extreme conditions. Their group included engineers, a radio operator, and a former Komsomol activist. They were young, fit, and brimming with the confidence that comes from mastering the wilderness. Their journey began with high spirits, documented by their cameras and meticulous diary entries, filled with jokes, observations, and the camaraderie of shared hardship. They sent postcards home, made plans for their return, and on January 27th, they began their ascent into the truly remote, uninhabited reaches of the mountains. Their last known camp was set up on the evening of February 1st on the slopes of Kolatshyakl, or Dead Mountain, another Mansi name that would soon take on a terrifying new meaning. They pitched their large 10-person tent on a relatively exposed ridge, digging into the snow to create a windbreak. Their diaries spoke of strong winds and falling snow, but nothing unusual for an experienced group. They ate dinner, prepared for the night, and settled in. The expectation was that they would descend the next day and send a telegram from the nearest village by February 12th, signaling their successful return. But the telegram never came. Initially, there was little concern. Delays were common in such remote expeditions. But as the days stretched into weeks, a gnawing anxiety began to set in among their friends and families. By February 20th, a full-scale search and rescue operation was launched, involving volunteers, military personnel, and aircraft. The vast, white expanse of the Urals seemed to swallow all trace of them. Then, on February 26th, the first chilling discovery was made. The search party located the group's tent, partially buried in snow, on the slope of Kolatshyakl. But the sight that greeted them was utterly bewildering, a scene that defied all logic. The tent had been cut open from the inside with knives, as if its occupants had burst out in a desperate, frantic escape. Inside, all their belongings were found: warm clothing, boots, food, cameras, diaries. Everything they would need for survival in sub-zero temperatures had been left behind, abandoned in a hurry so extreme it suggested an immediate, overwhelming threat. Following a trail of 9 sets of barefoot or sock-clad footprints leading downhill through the deep snow towards a distant cedar tree, the searchers began to uncover the unspeakable. About a mile from the tent, at the edge of a dense forest near the cedar, they found the first 2 bodies, Yuri Krivonishenko and Yuri Doroshenko. They were dressed only in their underwear and socks, their hands severely burned, their bodies showing signs of hypothermia. Beneath the cedar, broken branches suggested someone had desperately climbed it, perhaps to look for something or to escape something. Nearby, the remnants of a small, hastily built fire, barely enough to offer warmth against the brutal cold. Why would experienced hikers, facing temperatures of minus 25 to minus 30 degrees Celsius, be so inadequately dressed, so far from their shelter? Three more bodies were found between the cedar tree and the tent, scattered along the slope, as if they had been attempting to return to their shelter, but had succumbed to the cold. Igor Dyatlov, Zinaida Kolmogorova, and Rustem Slobodin. Their position suggested a desperate, crawling attempt to reach the tent. Dyatlov was found clutching a small branch. Kolmogorova had a bruise on her side, and Slobodin had a small but significant skull fracture. All had died of hypothermia, but the injuries, though seemingly minor, added to the growing unease. The mystery deepened. For two more months, the remaining four members of the group remained missing, swallowed by the deep snow. It wasn't until May 4th, when the snow began to melt, that their bodies were finally discovered in a ravine, buried under nearly 15 feet of snow, about 75 meters deeper into the forest from the cedar tree. And it was these four bodies that truly cemented the Dyatlov Pass incident as one of the most chilling and inexplicable events in modern history. Nikolai Thibault-Brignol had a massive skull fracture. Lyudmila Dubinina and Semyon Zolotaryov suffered devastating chest injuries, their ribs crushed as if by immense force, yet there were no external wounds on their bodies. The kind of force that would cause such internal damage was akin to a high-speed car crash or being hit by a powerful wave. But they were in the middle of a snowy mountain. Even more horrifying, Lyudmila Dubinina was found with her eyes missing and her tongue completely gone, a gaping void in her mouth. Alexander Kolevatov had multiple severe injuries, including a crushed chest and a fractured skull. Adding to the macabre scene, the clothing on these four bodies was a bizarre mix. Some wore clothes that had belonged to the first group of victims, suggesting they had stripped the dead to try and keep warm. But the most unsettling detail was the discovery of radioactive contamination on some of their garments. Not a high level, but enough to be detected. Why? What had caused this? The official Soviet investigation, after a brief and seemingly perfunctory inquiry, concluded that the hikers had died from a compelling natural force, and then abruptly closed the case, classifying the findings as secret. This hasty closure, coupled with the inexplicable injuries, the tent cut from the inside, the strange clothing, and the radiation, fueled decades of intense speculation and countless theories, each more terrifying than the last. Was it an avalanche? The terrain was not typical for a major avalanche, and the tent's condition didn't suggest a full burial. If an avalanche had occurred, why would they cut their way out and run barefoot into the snow, abandoning their gear? Why the specific internal injuries without external trauma? What about infrasound? The theory suggests that strong winds interacting with the mountain's topography could have created low-frequency sound waves, inducing panic, irrational behavior, and even physical distress in the hikers, driving them from their tent in a state of terror. But could it cause crushed ribs and a missing tongue? Perhaps a military experiment gone wrong. The radioactive clothing, the secrecy of the Soviet regime, the strange injuries, these fueled suspicions of a secret weapons test, a paradoxical explosion that caused internal damage without external blast marks. Were the hikers unfortunate witnesses, eliminated by the state? And then, the more outlandish, yet persistent, theories. The Yeti, a monstrous ape-like creature of folklore driven to a violent rage? Or something even more alien, an UFO encounter with bright lights reported in the sky by other groups in the region around the same time? Could the radiation be from an extraterrestrial source? Or was it something far more human, a conflict with local Mansi tribesmen? The Mansi were initially investigated, but cleared. Their reverence for the mountains and their peaceful nature made this theory unlikely, and the nature of the injuries didn't align with traditional weapons. The lack of a definitive, satisfying answer is what makes the Dyatlov Pass incident so profoundly unsettling. The official conclusion of a compelling natural force feels like a desperate attempt to close a file that refused to be understood. It leaves a void, a terrifying emptiness that the human mind yearns to fill. 65 years later, the Dyatlov Pass remains a chilling testament to the unknown. 9 young lives extinguished in a manner that defies our understanding of the world. Their final moments, a desperate dash from a seemingly safe tent into the freezing night, haunted by an invisible, crushing force. The image of Lyudmila Dubinina, her eyes and tongue gone, buried deep in the snow, continues to evoke a primal terror. It is a mystery whispered from the frozen peaks, a reminder that even the most prepared can be overwhelmed by forces beyond comprehension. And as the night deepens and the whispers from the dark grow louder, one cannot help but wonder what truly happened on Dead Mountain that frigid night in 1959. What terror drove those hikers from their tent? And what secrets does the snow still hold, forever guarding the truth of the Dyatlov Pass?